This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Jay Harwood's latest edition of Amazing Mets Conversation with my longtime friend Pat Hanlon, senior VP communications for my favorite football team, the New York Football Giants. Pat, you want to make you feel old? Combined, you and I have over 80 years of experience in pro sports.
It's
we should
scary.
Open up something, right?
It's scary. How about this? And I know you know this. I've been at the Giants for 30 years. I replaced Ed Croak, who had been at the Giants for 28 years. For better or for worse, for the last 60 years, the New York Giants have had two heads of PR, which is...
That's of course the stability of everything, you know.
But
Pat, you know, I'm a gigantic Giant fan, a gigantic Mets fan. You're of course a gigantic Giants fan. Have you always rooted for the Mets? I know we go back. I mean, at birth?
No. I grew up in the DC area. I grew up within 90 minutes of Washington and Baltimore. So I grew up a Washington, at that time they were the Redskins, a Washington football team fan, right? And a Baltimore Orioles fan. So, and when I was growing up, the Orioles, of course, played the Mets in the World Series, right?
Yes, sir.
What year was that?
1969.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway, that was my background. Everybody thinks because I'm from Pennsylvania, that I was either a Steelers or an Eagles fan growing up. Well, I was 3 hours from each of those cities. I was only 90 minutes from Washington and Baltimore. So those were my teams growing up. And the Washington Senators in the National League.
How did we first meet, Pat? I'm trying to remember.
Listen, I was going to ask, first of all, isn't this amazing that two guys that can barely use their cell phones are talking to each other via this medium, right?
It's crazy. I
got to be honest with you. I was not a good pandemic person because I never, ever got used to talking to a screen, right? Some people adapted to it just like that, and I'm still not used to it. So
no, people have to help me. I can't tell you, Douglas, one thing. I drive my IT guys crazy here because you have to have a password to get into the computer. So I switch off from every Giant, Bookie Bowling, Greg Larson, Bavaro, Taylor, Philson. I even threw a Bobby Clutterbuck at him. But I drive them crazy because all my passwords are all Giants and I forget Daryl Dess. Joe Morris. I mean, I don't remember what my Apple password is an old Giant, but
you can't remember which one. Now
Let
me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
How many of these podcasts have you done?
What I'm trying to do, Pat, is not to do just the old Met place. Trying to branch out a little bit. People I can talk to without looking at notes. People I have a relationship with. That's why, you know, you and I go back a long way, and you know, it's easy to talk to you better. But I remember, was it the 2000 Super Bowl? Was that the first time we met, or were,
maybe it could have been? You were in Tampa, obviously, right?
Yeah, I made one of my big mistakes before the game. I invited Strahan, Tiki, and Kerry Collins came to the game, and I mistakenly put Kerry Collins' number is 12 on the uniform, but it was 5, right?
Yes, 5. Correct.
So yeah. I had to get him another uniform. So,
I think Yeah. They came to a Mets game.
Came to the game.
Yeah.
Pat, let me just all over the place. Are you surprised at the conglomerate that Eli's become now? You know, I always saw him as a quiet guy, you know, and his brother Peyton was doing all this stuff. But are you surprised where he's become?
No. I mean, a little bit, but you clearly he was saving it for once he was done playing. Listen,
now he's in beer commercial.
What isn't he doing? But now you have to understand that family is pretty impressive, but across the board, right? And he is a chip off the old block, but he's just like as a player, he's his own guy. Like he and Peyton, or you're comparing apples and oranges, except with one notable exception. They're both incredible competitors, right? One of them, though, wears it on his sleeve, and the other one, Eli, you don't want to play poker with him, right? Because you don't know what the hell he's thinking, but you don't know what his mood or his emotion is. But I can tell you this, as much as Peyton wears his competitiveness on his sleeve, Eli has the same temperament. You just don't see it.
What I always admired about Eli's interviews was win or lose, you couldn't tell. You know, he would be there, and he wouldn't give you a whole lot, but he would give you enough. What was it working with him, Pat?
When we first drafted him, right, I said, listen, you come from a family that knows this business inside and out. You have plenty of people that are going to advise you on how to handle things. If you need advice, I'm not going to be another voice in your ear. I'm going to watch everything you say, everything you do. And if you need something from me, all you got to do is ask, right? So right off the bat, I told him, you have enough voices and enough resources on how to navigate your professional life, especially when it comes to the media. And I said, so I'm not going to add to the mix, but I'll be a resource for you if you need it. And, you know, what did he play? 15 years?
Right.
And
never got in there. Remarkable. Never was on a DL one time. Right.
Exactly. But my point is in all that time, maybe two or three times did we really have to have a conversation about how to handle something. Right.
And how was he when, not to bring up something, I mean, when he got benched?
Yeah, he wasn't a happy camper. Right. But he handled it with his typical class and dignity. But in his own understated way, he made sure that people knew he was pissed off about what had just occurred, right? And so,
another guy. Yeah, sorry.
No, and that's the way you always handle. Here's the other thing, Jay. When we lost on Monday. First of all, right after the game, win, lose, or draw, he was always there, right? But when we lost the game on Monday, when we opened the locker room up to the media, he would always be there. If we won, he wouldn't be there because he'd want his teammates to do the talking, right? But if we lost, he felt an obligation to stand at his locker and talk.
You know, it was like that too. David Wright, the exact same way. He hated talking about himself too, but when he always took the bullet when we lost 12-1, 14-1. When I got down to the locker room, I could always count on number five being there every time.
Well, that's what leaders do, right? That's what leaders do. Listen, if we lose, it's on me. If we win, it's because of everybody else in the room. And That's how they demonstrate that. But that's what leaders do.
Michael Strahan. I mean, talk about a guy who's all over the place.
Yeah, you know what? You talk about Eli and what he has become. And Strahan, you know, he led the way of this current generation of Giants. And, of course, you've been around long enough to remember what the Frank Giffords and the Pat Summeralls and those guys did. You know, it's been through generations the way our players have capitalized on being in the New York market in terms of their post-playing careers has been phenomenal. You know, we've got Tiki now who just got a new
promotion, right? And I mean, Strahan could be on shows with two different channels, you know.
And guess what? He has a piece of the action on all those shows, right?
But you know what I like about him? I like his loyalty. Even when he's on Fox, he lets his fandom go. He's not afraid to say he's rooting for the Giants. He goes, gives pep talks to the team. You know, I mean, I saw you had last week. You had Coach Parcells and Michael were out there. I like the fact that he's gotten big, but he hasn't forgotten his roots. Is he good with you, Pat?
He's always been good. Now, when he was playing, he had his ups and downs with the media.
I remember a couple of instances. I do.
But he obviously he grew through all that to become the successful businessman and media mogul that he is now. So,
Pat, you know, you and I are a lot in different ways. I think we both have the personal approach. I read a couple of weeks ago Tom Conklin's book, and he gave you credit for he could always go to you. I mean, I try to do it with my managers to not be overbearing and give some advice. And you had a special relationship with Coach Conklin.
Well, listen, and you and I would agree on this. We're in a people business, right? And in our roles, We have to establish trust in the relationships. First of all, you have to bring a little something to the table, right? You bring more to the table than I do, but you got to bring something to the table. You have to establish a trusting relationship, and the people that we work with have to know that we're doing our job, right? And so it's all about people. At the Giants, it starts with the mayors and the Tishes, and it filters all the way through the organization, which, by the way, just like your place, our place in 30 years that I've been there has probably quadrupled in terms of the number of people that work within the organization.
It's unbelievable, Pat. It's unbelievable.
Hey, don't get me started on that. But anyway, if you're going to be successful, the one common thread that has to continue to run, regardless of how many people you bring into the company, it's got to be about the people. It's got to be about relationships, right? And it's got to be about hiring good people and allowing them to do their job, right? And so when you work with, listen, managers and head coaches, there's not many more stressful occupations than that. And so they've got to have people that they can rely on and trust to be honest with them and give them sound advice when they need it. Right. But, you know, I'll never forget Tom Coughlin said to me one time that Bill Walsh had said to him that, you know, when you're sitting in the big chair, there's nobody to make you laugh, right? Like nobody comes in just to bullshit with you and make you laugh, right? And he said, who's going to make me laugh? I said, here he is.
That was my role too, Pat. I understand. My calculation, you work with 7 head coaches, I think, maybe a
Listen, over the course of the last few years, that number jumped.
I worked with 14 to 15 managers in my time.
Yeah.
And I thought it always very sad. And the people outside don't understand that you and I build relationships with these guys when you have to let it, when Willie Randolph gets fired, when Terry Collins gets fired. It hurt me to have a conversation with them. I'm sure you were the same way when the Joe Judges and
when McAdoo, Pat Shermer, Joe Judge, when those guys get fired, right, there is, listen, when Tom Coughlin left and those other guys got dismissed, you have survivor's guilt, right? And you look yourself in the mirror and you feel guilty.
Which you've done differently, right?
Yeah, exactly. You feel like you let them down, right? Because you have great.
No question.
First of all, they're good at what they do. They're good people and they work their asses off. And now you're looking at yourself and those poor sons of guns are out the door and you're looking in the mirror. You're still here and you're asking yourself, what the hell could I have done?
And the public doesn't get that part of it. The people, the fans don't get that part
no,
of it.
You know, I'm with you.
You see, you hire a new coach to, you know, great coach of the year. You've never been a head coach. I'm sure he came to you a lot. What's the New York market like? Market about? And did you, was he receptive to some of the stuff you said?
Yeah, but he is. Here's one thing, and I'm sure you've used this line 1,000 times. The first thing you tell people you work with who are going to be dealing in the public eye is you have to be yourself. You can, don't try to be anybody else, okay? And Dave's is that. He is himself when he's dealing with the media. He's been in the game and it has really been a student. You know, what impresses me is how somebody like Dave's prepares for this moment, right? And you can tell that he prepared, he knew he was going to get his shot, or he, at least he believed he was going to get his shot at some point. And for years, he was preparing himself for that moment. And it showed, right? The way he handled the team, the way he handled the media. You can tell he was a student of his profession. And by the way, his profession today is not the same as what it was even 10 years ago.
No question.
His end of the business has changed dramatically, right? And so, but we're fortunate in that, you know, Joe Shane, our general manager, and Dave's had a prior relationship before they got here, right? And so, that they arrive at the Giants with a common vision, a common objective, a common way of going about things. And I'll be honest, it's rare to see a GM and a head coach who are so aligned in that way, right? There's always, you know, when you have two people who've never worked together, right, who come together and work in those positions, you know, there's a real feeling out process about how to go about things. Well, we're fortunate. These two guys showed up and they didn't have to go through a feeling out process because they knew each other, right? And they had worked with each other.
Baseball, we have our spring training. How are your seasons divided up? I mean, with the OTAs and rookie camps, just give me a quick synopsis.
Listen. I don't want to sound like old fuddy-duddy, but when I first got in this business back in the NFL, back in the late 80s, the season would end. There would be no chatter about the NFL or the team until right before the draft. You know, now we have mock drafts for six weeks leading up to the draft. The first mock draft when I started that you would see would be on the it'd be in the newspaper on the morning of the draft, would be a mock draft, right? And then we'd have the draft, and then we'd have a little rookie mini camp, and then it'd be silence again for a couple months until we had a mini camp, right, in June, and then training camp. Now it is one continuum of activity, right? So listen, the players get a couple months off right after the season. Then they come back for voluntary workouts, right? And we were fortunate that almost all of our players were here throughout the whole spring. And it's a progressive, the off season is progressive. You go from strength and conditioning for a couple weeks to doing some limited on-field work to doing a little less limited on-field work. And then you have your mandatory mini camp, right? And then it's done.
But tell me, how did you handle the Daniel Jones thing when he came here? You know, well-spoken young man, some giant that didn't. Why was he drafted so high? And all the press conferences I've had, he's never misspoke. Always said the right thing. You know, even keeled, and now got himself a nice contract, and you know, hopefully keep going in the playoffs next year.
Listen, he's like, and I know when we first drafted him, people wanted to point out the similarities in terms of personality and that kind of thing with Eli. And sometimes that's overblown, but the fact of the matter is he is a lot like Eli in terms of just having a basic instinct on how to handle himself, right? And honestly, even though in the world we live in now, you can't completely ignore the outside noise, it's impossible to do. I think that he has trained himself to do that, right? And he had that when he got here. He was not going to be affected by what people on the outside.
Pat, I've been a Giant fan since 1958. I go back to Alan, the horse of Michi, running at me in 1917 when we lost to the Colts in overtime. For me, my greatest moment was the 17-14 game against the Pats. Burris in the corner. I was sitting in Phoenix, the corner right by my side. I mean, is that one or two? You have a different game, or is that your game too?
Oh, my gosh. It's hard. It's hard to beat that game when you're going in against a team that's going to for history to be 18-0. But as you well know, we played them in the final regular season game,
38-35.
On Saturday night in Giant Stadium, and to a person, our players walked off that field that night.
Okay, right?
They said, listen, if we get these sons of guns again, we will get them the next time. So we came, even though we got beat, and if you didn't really care who won, or even if you did, it was an entertaining football game, right? And it was a shootout, which, of course, the Super Bowl ended up being the exact opposite of that.
You know what gets lost in history too? The 21-17 game a couple of years later. I remember Manningham's catch along the sideline. You know, I forget, with 2 minutes, it was really late in the game.
Yes.
Right? I mean, but that catch kind of gets overlooked.
You sound like Darius Slayton. For whatever reason, I happened to be looking at Twitter yesterday. And yeah. Darius Slayton said exactly what, and he's right. Like, everybody talks about what a great throw it was, and it was a tremendous throw. The catch was, every time you watch it, it's still amazing, right? I mean, he's got people bearing down on him, and he's got to keep his feet in bounds, right, and catch the ball. And it was a hell, and of course, those guys on the Patriots sideline were all waving incomplete. Well, no, it wasn't. It was complete.
And in the helmet play with Tyree, for me, the fact that Eli was able to stay up and not get down, you know, and catch a great catch, it was just a great game.
Well, you know what? What I love about that play is when Eli and his offensive linemen are talking about it, and Eli's pointing fingers at everybody who missed the block on that play. But, yeah, no, he was – Eli has some athletic ability.
Yeah. I mean, people say, I mean, I don't know when he comes up for the Hall of Fame, but I mean, just those two late drives and, you know, I mean, to me, that would guarantee him a lot. What's your feeling on? I know you keep.
You're preaching to the choir. You're preaching to the choir. I don't know what the numbers are, but I got to believe that every quarterback that is a two-time Super Bowl MVP is in the Hall of Fame, right?
But Patsy, excited about this year? I mean,
yeah, very much so. We had a good offseason. We had another good draft. We added a lot of key pieces in free agency, and the most important thing is we have with Joe Shane and Dabes, we have a foundation in place that we can build on. Right. And, But I love Dave's approach because last year doesn't mean anything. But the foundation is still there, right? The foundation, the most important thing about last year, listen, making the playoffs for the first time in several years was important. But the biggest thing is that the foundation has been laid to continue to progress and build. So, yes.
I want to thank you for helping me get an upgrade. For years, I've been going to the game, and I got tired of people standing up in front of me. So you put me in touch. And right now, I'm the 50. I mean, you know, I don't do a lot of traveling, Pat. I don't go to Europe. Well, I went to Europe.
I was starting to make notes about the games I know you had been to on the road.
I said in Chicago, in Europe. I was going to go. It was against the Cardinals. No, Arizona. I forget who it was. I was just going to go to watch a game and come back. And my friends said, you can't go to London and not do anything. So they convinced me. We spent eight days in Paris and Normandy. But I did see the Giants game. They made me go. I was going to have a two-day trip, go to the game and come back. But, you know, but I,
that, you know. That was Linda, Barbara, and Mark that said, no.
Yes. Good. And we've been all over. But I'm excited about this year. I'm excited about our friendship, Pat. You know, I hope to see you soon. Before you get crazy.
It's an honor. And the reason I asked you about how many podcasts you've done is I'm wondering if this isn't the last one because you scraped the bottom of the barrel.
Pat, listen, this is the thing. When I don't like to look down at my nose, how many home runs did he hit? I like to do these things with friends, people I can BS with, tell stories about. That's what, you know, they don't want to hear Darryl Strawberry hit 22 home runs. I want to talk about, you know, the other stuff, you know, what we're doing. And this is what I enjoy doing, talking about Giants football. Pat, I hope nobody from the Mets is listening, but if you walked into my house, you would think I worked for the football Giants. I have pictures of Bill Parcells, Eli, Michael Strahan, have the catch. I have a Frank Gifford picture. I have a Charlie Conway picture.
Can you see that, Pat? Can you see that?
I can't wait.
Super Bowl 42, the victory formation. And it's hanging over the kitchen table. You know, most people have like religious figures or beautiful portraits. This is,
you know, the one of my benefits of being a Met and Giant fan, I struck up a little bit of a relationship with Coach Parcells. I did a podcast with him a year ago. I used to see him all the time in Jupiter with, I guess, Belichick and all those guys hung up there. But, you know, Bill Parcells knows his baseball. He can tell you who the starters were in the 54 Giants. But
thank you. All right, Jay.
And all the best, Pat. I enjoyed it.
It's an honor.